Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Honestly Speaking podcast. You got Farb, Eddie, and G. If you're joining us for the first time, write a review, share with a friend, help us grow. Today in the booth, we got Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis, who is a personal friend of G's, but also the head pastor at Middle Collegiate Church. Today we get into what the Middle Church is up to recently and its relationship with the larger Protestant and religious community. We also get into Dr. Jackie Lewis's large social following and the pressures of being always on. And lastly, we wrap up with how do you be your authentic self and all that entails. So kick your feet up and enjoy.
Welcome back, everybody. I am so excited to have a very special, radiant guest today. My spirit mama, my mentor, my Reverend Jacqueline Lewis.
Hey.
Cue applause.
Yay. I'm so glad to be with you. What's up, G?
Yes, yes. How's it going?
I'm a little allergic today, but it's a beautiful day. The pollen is happy. The sun is shining. The pollen is being generous with itself.
You're in New York, right?
Yeah. I'm in my New York apartment. Yeah.
You're in New York. Okay. Michael and Eddie are based in New York also. So
y'all
are
neighbors. Michael. Hey, Eddie.
Hey.
Great to have you. Yeah. The pollen is being generous. That is I love that positive way of spinning that. I haven't heard that yet. I need to run with that.
Generously kicking my butt too.
So Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis.
Yeah, isn't it generous?
It's like so kind as to. I'm sorry. Is there a delay?
I was still working the pollen joke, but we're done.
Okay. Oh, okay. Y'all are done bantering. We can get down to business. What's up?
Yes.
So Jackie, can you just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little more about Middle Church? Because it's not so much the traditional church, like Michael said, it should be. But what makes it a little different?
Yeah. First of all, I'm really glad to be in this conversation with y'all today. Thank you for asking me to come in. I'm Jackie. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm the senior minister at Middle Collegiate Church, where I have been the senior pastor for 17 years. That is the longest I've worked anywhere. Mm. Middle Church is the oldest continuous Protestant church in North America, part of the collegiate churches formed in 1628. And in some of our holy texts, there's a conversation about putting new wine in old wineskins. I would say middle is new wine in old wineskins. It is crazy, radically welcoming. Everybody is welcome just as they are as they come through the space. Not just in terms of show up and come on in here, but like leaders that are trans, gay, bi, lesbian, straight. We are indigenous, Black, you know, Latinx, Asian. We are Latinx. We are women and men and non-binary folks. We are Christian and Muslim and Jews and Buddhists and atheists. Come, because they like
and
the
atheists.
Music.
That's right.
They like the music and they like the justice and they're like, whatever, you know? And we try to offer a theology of just love, period. You know, taking seriously Rabbi Jesus's teaching to love God with everything you have, to love your neighbor as yourself. Love, period. Everything else is commentary, midrash, thought, philosophy, whatever. But can you love? And I think the folks who come get with the love. We had a fire last December, December 5th. We had already shut down for COVID since March, and our sanctuary was totally destroyed. And what we learned is that the church is not the sanctuary. 350 people joined us from March to March last year without the building, without a space. And we just keep trying to do love all the way across the globe, feeding people, standing up for queer folks, standing up for Black Lives Matter, standing up for kids, a women's right to choose, against guns, for Mother Earth. And it's just a joy to be there. Hard work, but good work.
I remember the first time I went to Middle Church. Susan brought me, our mutual friend and another one of my mentors. And I was raised Muslim. I never really went to churches. Being a queer person, I was kind of had a lot of anxiety around going to church. Susan came to get me, and I was at a cafe drinking early in the morning. I was drinking because I was like anxious. This is back when I drank. Susan's like, why are you drinking? I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to go up in here. I had all these anxieties, but I just went. And when I tell you I cried while I was up in there. It was just so, the energy of it is indescribable. Being an artist, the amount of talent that I saw, but not just talent, but genuine spiritual expression through talent was just something I had never seen before. And it took me a couple years before I actually joined your congregation, but I just remember that day like it was yesterday. Such a special place.
I remember that day like yesterday too, Genesis. You were like light wrapped in a body is what I remember. And it was easy to see your light like wrapped in a, you know, beautiful caramel colored, you know, badass body, but just light that radiates. And I think that's something that's true about middle. It is just a place where light moves, where light gets outside of the box, gets out of the box into the digital spaces, and also invites collaboration, right? There's more than one way to heal the world, and we don't know all the answers. We just say, kind of bring your questions, bring your talent, bring your fear, bring your joy, bring your drink, get your cup. So, one of my young people says, if you have to pour up, come anyway. I don't know. Is that why you say that? I'm like, okay, come as you are.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Get up in the morning, come a little hungover, brush your teeth and show up. Who cares? We don't care.
Yeah. True.
Jackie, you know, one of the things that I definitely stuck out to me, especially after being raised Catholic, is the emphasis that is certainly put in respect and showing solidarity with those, however they identify, however that, you know, their gender is. To me, that aspect just feels so radically different than any other church I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious when that started and what the roots of that are.
Thanks, Michael. That's a great question. You know, I have to say I was really lucky. I inherited a church. My predecessor, Gordon Drott, was this Dutch white man with bell bottoms and a big curly hair when he came to church. And he was a professional clown. So he brought this love of art with him. There was a young man named Jerice Johnson, a black gay man, not out at first, who wanted to start a gospel choir at the church. This was like in the 80s, you know. And the East Village was dying of AIDS. People were being shunned. They didn't know what it was. The gay cancer. And when other churches were closing their doors, Gordon was like, y'all, what? Are you kidding me? You have to come here. So we not only helped people live with AIDS, we did funerals and memorials. A program was started called Celebrate Life, which was to feed people healthy, nutritious food and do medical exams and AIDS tests and talk about safe sex. And so it was begin our in our DNA then to really love all the people, to love the arts, to be as queer as we could be, and to destigmatize AIDS, right? And it was the beginning, Michael, of this like wide open door. You know, so the theater people found themselves, the artists found themselves. You didn't have to join the church to sing in the gospel choir. At one time, the gospel choir was like Jerice Johnson and the Pips. It was like Jerice, this black man, and like three white women singing gospel music with him. And it grew to this crazy, you know, multi-ethnic gospel choir. But Michael, you know, it didn't cross Gordon's mind, straight white man, to not love all the people. It never crossed my mind to not love all the people. So I inherited that. I didn't have to start over, right? I didn't have to make a case or convince people. And people have just found us. A young black minister who I met when Paris, I got to preach in Paris before COVID last year. His name is Victor Green. I want to say his name. So gifted, gay, black, gifted artist, poet. Everybody's welcome. And the church doesn't get that. That's what I want to say to people who are listening. Like, if you believe in God, which I do, and my favorite name for God is love. So God, love can do its own thing however she wants to. If you believe there's a God, How can you possibly believe that God would both be creating the creation and then decide to hate some of it? That's just so stupid. It's stupid. Mm. It's foolish. It's a misunderstanding of scripture. Is a softer way to say what I really mean. But when religion, the word religion really means to bind together. Religate means to bind together. If religion is how do we keep people out? If religion is how do we put people out? If religion is how do we make people feel badly as opposed to feel loved? That's just not really the right business to be in. So,
I have one quick follow up, which is, I think one of the things I keep hearing is how much it thrives off the fact that you can be atheist or Muslim. Could you ever see on the flip someone leading the church that is atheist or Muslim or Jewish?
That's a really excellent question. I think so. I really do. Our board, my 15 people board has one of my key leaders, I shall not name, but Gino's. This person is absolutely an agnostic, like does not really believe in God at all, but really believes in love and really believes in justice. And this woman is gifted like nobody's business. And so the proof text of her ability to lead wasn't, what's your creed you're saying? And is Jesus da 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 da. Now, would Middle hire, Middle is a Christian church that is a interfaith Christian church. Would the leaders hire a Muslim clergy as the senior? I don't know. Would they add a Muslim clergy to the staff? Absolutely. Would they add a Jewish person to the staff? Absolutely. I'm 100% clear that we would understand the value actually in having interfaith staff. And we actually do have adjunct people who relate to us, from Linda Sarsour to Hassan Rashid to Angel Kyoto Williams. Our team of people who come through our interfaith.
Got it. Yeah.
Kind of similar to, well, I guess kind of in line with Farb's question, is this church just a complete anomaly in the larger Protestant community? Does the larger Protestant community approve of what you all are doing? Or are they kind of weirded out by what you're doing or disagree with it?
That is such a good question. Well, the larger Protestant community is as varied as our fingerprints, is what I would say. That religion, the Christian religion, Catholic, Protestant, Baptist, evangelical, all the pockets of Christianity are so diverse. We definitely weird some people out. We do. And I get mostly love in the social spaces, but every now and then somebody will be like, first of all, you're a woman, you should shut up and be quiet and sit down. There's that. Like those people who think somehow women shouldn't talk in church, they'd be like, shut up. Or, people who think me being queer loving is like, what's wrong with you? They're an abomination. Well, that's crazy. So I get that. I don't get any hate for the conversations I have about, against anti-Semitism or like against anti-Islamic sentiment. Every now and then when I wade into Palestine, Israel, which I did this year, some of my Jewish people will be like, well, wait a minute. And I think I just want to speak to that, Eddie, to say, if I'm doing love, I'm doing love. And I gotta be able to be fully throated in my support of Jewish people and their personhood and their right to land and liberty and life, as fully throated as I am in my support of Palestinians and their right to land and liberty and a life, period. And don't make me choose, because that's a crazy choice. So when you're doing love radically in the world, some folks are just afraid, no matter what, who they are afraid of the change it calls for. Like it calls for change. If I'm saying to the Pope, how can you not support women's leadership? What? If I'm saying to the Jewish people, all those Palestinians that were displaced so you could have a homeland? What? How are we not going to have that conversation about them needing a homeland? I mean, I got a beautiful letter from a Jewish woman the other day who had done some research in her own family, and they were Holocaust survivors, right? And they, they died in Auschwitz and the camps. And what she said to me is, when the Germans got clear that they had really screwed that up royally, which they had, they did reparations. Mm. Her dad, who lost his dad in the camps, got a check every month until he died at the age of 91. A check.
Wow.
And all of his progeny get to decide to be citizens in Germany if they want forever. That's reparations.
That's dope,
right? And so shouldn't Palestine have that kind of right? Yes, Israel needed a homeland. Thanks be to God. We finally woke up to the Holocaust and did something about that. But shouldn't Palestine have this as well? So I'm saying I'm an equal opportunity truth teller, Eddie, and I'm an equal opportunity lover. And every now and then people don't love that. The Protestant church mostly supports what I do, but it's white evangelicals who think I'm crazy town. And I am a little crazy for love. That makes me think about Beyonce, but I'm just a slightly crazy town for love. Da,
da, da, da, da, da, and staying with that.
You know? Right?
And staying with that for one more second, that's I completely agree with how you framed what it is you all are doing. Do you ever worry, because I look at different religious communities or other communities in general, and you look at just kind of how communities function just regularly, a lot of communities have meaning via their exclusionary boundaries.
Yes.
That's sort of like what gives them meaning in the first place. Historically, there's been a lot of bad versions of that, but it is not always bad. Families, for example, a lot of it really only has meaning through its exclusionary boundaries. You know, we are blood, we're biologically connected. I know this is my family versus who is not part of the family. So that's not necessarily bad. Do you worry that your church, that it is so inclusive and so low barrier to entry that it loses the meaning of what the definition of your community actually is?
Mm-hmm.
Is it so inclusive that it has no meaning?
That's a fierce question. No, I don't worry about that. I just wrote this book called Fierce Love that's coming out in November. And one of the chapters in it, Eddie, is about how to increase your tribe. So what you're saying is absolutely spot on, right, about how human beings function and identity. You know, part of my training as a psychologist, right? We are not that. We are this. We are not that. Mm. This gives us meaning. It gives us closeness. It gives us alliance, right? It gives us territory. It links us. This is who we are.
Identity.
Exactly. This is who we are. This is our identity. And what I'm trying to argue is my identity can be human family. Like, my identity can be human family. Now, I'm a Lewis. I got six siblings. I've got a dad. Mom died 4 years ago. That's our tribe. I'm a Jordan. That's mommy's part. You know, I'm a Jordan. I'm black. I'm straight. I'm married. I'm a grandmother. Like, I got all kind of identities. I've got all kinds of identities. I'm older than you. You know, identity. But also, I'm a New Yorker, and also I'm an American, and also I'm a global citizen. I belong to the people who are dying in India of COVID. I am a global citizen. So what could happen, Eddie, is that we could increase our tribe and therefore increase our territory and therefore have multiplicity of identities. And they can be both Venn diagram spaces. This is where it mostly is hot. But also overlapping circles, this is where it's hot. But out here on the boundaries of where I'm thinking about Du Bois' double consciousness idea, you know how black people have both our kind of black gaze on ourselves, but also we've internalized the white gaze. Some of the work I do is like everybody ought to be double conscious. Straight people ought to be queer and straight conscious. Right? Men ought to be women and men conscious, right? Binary gendered people ought to be non-binary conscious. The way we love each other is we learn each other's stuff. This is what matters to this tribe. And when I know about it and I grow empathy about it, I'm less frightened by it. I'm less circle my wagons about it. And it's kind of Ubuntu, right, Eddie? I'm saying, you know, I am because you are isn't just the two Black people standing next to me. I am because you are is Asian mommy who got her behind whipped on the subway. She's my mother, right? Your kids are my kids. The thriving of your people is my thriving. That's very womanist. That's very Alice Walker. And that's very Jacqueline J.
Yes,
Lewis.
Yes, indeed. Jackie, I think you're one of the people I think about when, one of the few people I think about when I feel like I can't, and I think about what you do, and I realize that I can. And you have this way of not only being so magnetic when you speak as someone who's witnessed you in person. I say you and Linda Sarsour are the two people that out of hundreds of people I've seen speak publicly that was are most impactful, like most jarring and real. You have this way of kind of magnetizing an audience online and offline, but you don't seem to center yourself, which I think is a very interesting, unique talent. But on the other hand, when there's backlash to be had, you are kind of a, can be a lightning rod to that backlash. Similar to a lot of your contemporaries and people who come to the church, right? Like Linda Sarsour. And I mean, I could probably name 10 who are like lightning rod, you know, they're called radical. They're the, they're this, they're that, and the other. How do you balance staying on? It's seemingly all the time. I know there's downtime, but like, how do you manage that energy of like taking in the negative, exuding the positive, not centering yourself, being of service and of community? Like, what is Jackie's giveaway to the young generation, millennials like myself, Generation Z, who are interested in being of service in the way that you are?
Thank you for that, love. And I was hearing some pings. I'm trying to shut down some apps here. Yeah, first of all, if you think that that's how I move in the world, I am deeply honored and complimented by that observation from you, Genesis, because I just respect the hell out of you. And it, to be in a communication with you, to be in a conversation with you, to be someone you admire, I'm saying across a generation like that, it just really moves me deeply. I mean that. And I was thinking about the way I answered Eddie's question. I want to kind of tie those two together. You know, I heard myself say, that's very womanist, that's very Alice Walker, that's very Jackie. It's something about knowing who you are. It's what I'm trying to say. Like, I'm 62 now. My husband says to stop saying that to people, but I am, and I like being 62. I'm like, I'm 62 years old, and I don't feel whatever that's supposed to feel like. I feel great. But I did learn a lot of things in these last 40 years, you know, about being a woman, being Black, being a leader. You know, I went to seminary right before everybody started talking about self-care in seminary. Like, what is that? I just think I am called, it's a vocation, to be a public theologian, to be a public ethicist, to be funny, to be irreverent as I do. Do you know what I mean? Like all the tools in your chick bag are, I'm irreverent, I'm funny, I tell the truth, I got a lot of love to give, I pour out my soul, I'm vulnerable. Like those are the things I am, which is what I was saying. That's me. And it's what it is I get to give in the world. And I would say, gee, you do that too, right? You and Michael and Eddie do that too. And that's the message to young people. You have to find your authentic self. You just have to be yourself. Yourself. Yourself will change. It totally changes. And if it doesn't change, please call me. Let's talk about that. Because, you know, we should change and we should grow, right? And I'll coach you if you're feeling static. But the you you are, the thing you care about, the passion you feel, the thing that gets you both excited and the thing that pisses you the hell off, those things are like information for how to use yourself. This makes me laugh out loud. This makes me cry so hard. This makes me angry. This makes me excited. This is my vision for what a world can be. That's where your music comes from. That's where your rapping comes from. That's where the show comes from. That's where a good poem comes from, a good book comes from. That's your stuff. And when you do it, you feel a joy. Rumi says, when you do something fun, I got to look up a bunch of good people for my little book and quote them. Rumi says, when you do something from your soul, you feel a river moving, a joy. Oh my God, that speaks to me. Like, if you're doing your soul work, that's joy. And when you get through doing your soul work and you're tired, you take a nap. You know what I mean? You go to sleep or you go dancing or you take a Sabbath, like I get to this summer. But I'm not worried about, like, I work so hard and then what? When you get through working hard, you look over at what you've accomplished and you say, oh my God, I made a difference. And then you go to sleep or you go have a glass of wine with your friends or tea or you meditate. That, I think, is the balance. You give what you can, as you can, the best you can, with all you can. And then you take a break and pass it off. In that river analogy, I write in the book, that river is going to be there when you step out. It's not going anywhere. So I get to tag out, right? Sucks. And when I tag out, and I'm like, I'm out. Somebody's in the shallow end calling the play. Hey, you know? Somebody's in the deep end because they're a better swimmer than me. And they're like, okay, it's what we're going to do over here. And when you get back in, the river takes your shape again. And you move back in there. And it kept on doing what it's supposed to do. And there's so many of us doing love in the world. We get to take a break and we get to tag in. Does that make sense, honey?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that.
I would like to just push a little deeper, though, on that.
Sure.
Because for us doing this work, I think there, you know, of course we have to show up as our authentic selves. And I think we can understand that flow and that stepping out to take that breather. But I'm curious of what that actually looks like for you in actuality, right? Yeah. I mean, no one can be 100% of the time in the flow and you have to take steps back. And it's not about being heroes, right? We're not supposed to be these perfect people that, you know, we display out. Actually, the best thing we can ever do is show some flaws and show some humanity where we struggle through something. So I'm curious, you know, Jay, you're so on the front lines of all these things. Yep. Like, you know, where has there been a recent situation where you have struggled? And what does that look like, I think, more acutely for you on how you handled it and, you know, your process?
Great, Michael. Thank you for that question. Thank you for pushing me around on that.
Great question.
Like, I want to say part of vulnerable is flaws, though, right? Like, vulnerable is, what did I say? Authentic. That's better. Part of authentic, if you're not showing your flaws, you're not authentic. So I just want to say that up front. I'm so overwhelmed by my fire, Michael, that I can feel that I've got a shorter fuse. I'm overwhelmed by my fire. And I'm so angry that this woman next door to me didn't do what she was supposed to do and burn my church the hell down. I'm so mad about it. I walk with Jesus, but I am super pissed about that. And so what I do about that is I have a therapist. And I have a husband and I have great friends who, when I tag out, I'm like, I just need to tell you the truth of this moment. And I can rant, I can rave, I can shake my fist, I can cry. And when I do that, I feel better. So I can turn back to the world with love, right? I can turn back the world with grace. That's one thing I do, is to get in a truth taxi with my girlfriends or my therapist, or I have a coach, my husband. Poor boy, poor John. He is always listening. I give him haircuts and he listens to me, bitch. Okay. Oop. It's not exactly an even covenant, but that's what happens. You know? He says, can we make an appointment? Do you have to do that all day? I'm like, okay. So we sit down together. I'm like, this is the time where Jackie gets to just be manically, absolutely crazy and say the things. And then I feel better. And I think that's a really important part of leading and being in the world. Where do you get to be real and say, I hurt, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm pissed, I'm, you know, whatever. Get it out. I get it out. And then it doesn't turn into cancer. And you,
right. That emotion has to go somewhere.
It has to. And you get it out and then you feel better. And this is what I want to be super honest about, Michael. I'm so lucky that I have a public platform. I actually say a lot of the ish, to use Genesis' word, that I feel in public. I might rehearse it with John so it doesn't have all the bad words in it, but I get to talk about fire trauma and racism and all the things in public. And that, I think, is a unique gift to have. So you don't have to have really kind of two people. Do you know what I mean? Like this, my one authentic self is both a love warrior, can't we all get along, but also a prophetic critiquer of culture and systems. And those people get to live at the same time often. So I don't have to be bifurcated and like the energy of pretend and fake and facade. I can't abide that anymore. When I was younger, I had to do a lot of Donald Winnicott, psychologists, would call a false self. I can't be truly all the things because somebody won't like it and I won't get a promotion and all the kind of stuff. I am my own boss mostly, and I get to be myself mostly, and I do it, and it really makes a difference to have that this job. That's a lucky thing. I think the third thing I would say into that, though, is I would lie if I said I'm great at tagging out. I'm not great at tagging out. I do it. I do it better now than I ever have. I have an amazing team at my church now that just really makes me tag out. And I'm leaving for 3 months. Michael, I had a fire, and I'm leaving for 3 months. I'm getting in a car on June 29th, and I'm taking my behind away from my church for 3 months. I would never have done that before. But there's nothing I can do except to stop right now. And I'm not like desperate stop. I got a great plan of going around the South and talking about Black folks' religion. I got a great plan for chilling in August and losing 5 more pounds. And then in September, I'll be at the beach getting as chocolatey black as I possibly can because I like that. And then I come back to work. And when I come back to work, I will have recovered from this last year and a half. And I deserve that.
Well, I love to hear that. I mean, I'm so obsessed with my work too, but I feel like in a positive way. I live and breathe it, and I'm passionate about the things I do, and I have great conversations on the day I get to work with folks like G and, you know, help with her film and, you know, do all sorts of different things. But there has to be a certain point where you have to get off the rails. And if that means literally thinking about nothing, that actually might be the best thing you could ever do for going forward. So anyway, I love to hear, and makes me really happy to hear that you're taking that time.
I think that's right, Michael. And I guess what we want to say to people who are listening is you might not get to wait to so-and-so and then take 3 months. So what's the daily thing you build in? And I do that well. Like my morning routine with my husband is just like I live and die for. You wake up, and John makes the coffee because I make crappy coffee. And you sit down. And before you get into your phone, we have these.
At least you know that.
I just can't do it. Like, well, but you drink that coffee and you have that talk of like.
Some people don't know
what you can do. Don't ever come to my house and ask. If I offer you coffee, say, is John making it? And say, no. Don't even drink it. But that I live and die for that.
Jackie, I think about that advice that you gave for millennial and Gen Zs. It boiled down to be yourself. And if I would have heard that, so I'm 34. If I would have heard that at 31, let alone 21, 22, I don't know if I would have connected with that because of what you said about all of these different pressures we feel of like, how can I truly be myself? Of like, okay, I'm a female queer rap artist in the industry that pretty much hates women and gay people, you know, like, or I have this job, a salary position that I really do have to put on this face for. And, you know, yes, so massa too. These people's in order to get a paycheck. You know, it's not until recently till I've achieved a certain amount of freedom to where I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't know how long that's going to last, but like my point is I wouldn't have known how to be myself.
Yeah.
So is there any advice you can give, you know, the majority of us who don't, you know, we still have to answer to people and have to live in these two or three brains and two or three
Yeah.
faces.
Well, so I just want to say, these are like, this is the best conversation I've had in a long time. You all are master great questions. And I love it. Love it. Listen,
none of this was prepared. But also, we just going on
like
the fly.
It's just beautiful. It's organic, and we should write this down and share it. Right. I think this is what I would say. When I was 31, and somebody was telling me to be myself, I couldn't be myself. I couldn't be all of myself, all of the places. But where can you be yourself as part of surviving and thriving? Is what I would say. So when I'm 31 and I'm at Eastman Kodak Company and I'm an executive selling copiers to Apple, that's what I was doing at 31, right before seminary. I had a group of friends, one, two women who lived with me in my house. We were like a white girl, a Japanese girl, and me, Charlie's Angels or Jackie's Angels or something. And we were really besties. I have all these references to old stuff. Okay. We were really besties. And like, we played tennis together. We lived in San Jose. We go to the beach together. We'd run together. We'd go dancing together. We'd cook together. It was like, we didn't have partners. None of us had partners. And we were just like deeply buds. And that time in my life of, I had been in a relationship that broke up, though I was lonely in a certain kind of way, I was really forging a part of my personality that still sustains me, which is the deep, deep, deep friendships with women. How do we learn to do that? Girl children do not learn that. I'm sorry. There's a time when your girlfriend is like, woohoo, girl, let's hold hands and skip and, you know, do each other's hair. And then the culture kind of teaches women often to compete with each other and to not be supportive. That trio. Now is this thick group of Black clergy women that were friends. And like, we, you know, drink champagne and eat pound cake. We're in a text chain. We have each other's backs. If I can't be my full self in a meeting, which still I might, and I want to say this better. Please don't think I have multiple personality disorder. I'm going to be one of myself in that meeting. Do you know? Like, I'm saying psychologically, there's this thing about internal family systems. Like, everybody's got more than one people in there. So you pick one of your people and be your best that person that day. We can grow those muscles. We can develop those aspects of ourselves, right? So I'm trying to say to young people, okay, I got to survive in this record business where as a gay Black woman, it ain't my thing. But you did something, right? You were your authentic what? Your authentic bridge builder, your authentic truth teller. Which person did you have to bring out, right? You were your authentic badass in that negotiation, right? You were your authentic warrior if you had to stand in. There's an aspect of you that you can fully be authentically true in that I think can save your life. So if I have to go to a job where I cannot actually pull out all my stuff, I'm going to code switch because I can't actually talk hip hop at the white table of the executives or whatever that is. I'm just being honest, right? So over here,
right.
You know, Jackie, who loves to talk hip hop, is like, I'm going to mobilize polite Jackie today, you know? And when I get home, I'm going to, you know, take off my shoes and get in the hot tub or whatever and be more fully some other aspect of myself. I really do believe that this is the truth, that that's how Black people have survived. That's how queer people have survived. That's how women have survived over the millennia, is we know how to code switch and we know how to be the other parts of ourselves when we get home over dinner. And I think that's what we need to do. Still.
I co-sign that's a heavy co-sign, but even there's even more there in that. I mean, we all know what code switching is. Code switching is a, you know, just a product of survival. Yeah. It's something you need to do in American society. But even what you were saying, there being multiple uses or multiple people inside everybody, I think that is completely true. I mean, we're all, especially as we get older, we're just multidimensional. Yep. We're not one dimensional in that, you know, we are only one type of person at all times. And, you know, if we can't be that one type of person, you know, that's wrong. It's there's beyond code switching. There's just context switching.
That's right. That's
how
right.
I'm going to be with Farb and G at the bar is not how I'm going to be with my mom
a
Sunday morning.
Right.
And it's still authentically me, but it's just a completely different context. So
beautiful.
There's that. That's just the multidimensional me that I can still be authentic in those two different situations. I mean, it took me a long time to learn that, you know, selling out or this and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But
right.
I think the context switching outside of the code switching is something that is just true for everybody.
I want to co-sign the way you said that, Eddie. Just adding into that kind of like there's code switching, there's context switching, and there or context setting, and that with that. But we're both saying is this multiple self. Like, why can't we celebrate that, right? And I think our queer friends who are non-binary have something to teach us about these multiple selves. I think we all know we have them. We are attracted to different kinds of people. We think different kinds of thoughts in different contexts. We respond to the world in different kinds of ways. And to be able to mobilize that and still say that's truly me, that I think is the growing edge. Like, that's truly you to have all those different kinds of gifts inside yourself. Celebrate that, right? The other day, I'll tell a real quick story. I was in a meeting. I'd be gentle because someone might be listening. And honestly, this woman I was talking to was giving me the most patronizing white lady talk of life. I just was shocked and awed at it. It doesn't happen that much anymore. So I was like, what? First I was, Michael, I was having an out of body experience at first. I was like, what? It's 2021. What is happening right now? It was crazy. And to be honest with you, even in my church community, sometimes my nicest white people will get really white on me and act like I'm black. Like in a moment, they'll be like, forget, and just like some whiteness will come out and it'll be sort of like, I'm going to tell you things you already know and talk to you in a condescending way. And then it'll be a flash and it's over. But this was sustaining for a really long time. And at first I thought, I'll do what I do at church thing, right? Because you can imagine I'm in a multi-ethnic church. So I don't always blow people up when they act that way. I might say something like, let's just stop a minute and ask ourselves, what's happening right now? You know, like that's my favorite thing to do. But with this particular person, I went all the way Black Lives Matter in about 5 seconds. I just couldn't believe it. I was listening and then I was like, I went crazy town. I had energy and I went something like, I'm actually having a hard time believing that you're talking to me like you're talking to me and you're expecting me to just kind of like sit here and take that, like that kind of thing. Now, both of the ways I handle that stuff is Jackie authentic. One is, you are in my community and I don't really want you to crush your soul today because you're having a bad moment. That's a good strategy. But the other one was, this person doesn't know me that well in a way that if I didn't, it escalated from there. If I didn't stop it, that microaggression was going to continue. And I was like, hell to the no. I can't do it. So both of those are authentic Jackie responses.
Exactly. Well, that I couldn't even imagine being that. You handle it better than I would have. But you know, that's why you're in charge. You're definitely better than me at that. But that sounds like a great place to close it. Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis, it was amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. And also, Farb and I live in this New York. We're definitely going to pull up. I hadn't been to Middle Church.
When can you pull up? When are we coming?
I don't know. Farb, what do you think? We're pulling up soon, I'd say.
Soon.
So why don't you?
I'm back next week.
Let's make a date. So Middle Church, you know, burn. It did burn. But on October 3rd, we are having an outdoor come to home to Middle Church street fair type thing. Can I get us on the calendar to pull up? And maybe Genesis will come.
Yeah.
I'll pull up for sure.
Right? Putting in the calendar right
100%.
Now.
Right? That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
100%.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Yeah. You guys are so smart and good.
Definitely.
I have faith in smart young people. Thank you. I'm counting on you to heal this crazy world.
We're trying to make you proud.
Do it. Heal us. Make it better. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thanks, Eddie. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Jackie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.